January 29th, and this is the Civil War Podcast. It was on this day in 1863 that the Confederacy passed an act of Congress issuing cotton bonds. When Confederate attempts at diplomatic relations with Europe failed, economic ties were forged by way of interpersonal relations. The son of Émile Erlanger, one of Europe's foremost bankers, married Marguerite Mathilde Slidell, daughter of John Slidell, the Confederate emissary to France. The French firm Erlanger & Compagnie made a loan offer as a gesture of goodwill. France was a supporter of the Confederacy during the Civil War. The bond principal was denominated in British currency and could be converted to New Orleans cotton valued at 12 cents a pound to be delivered 6 months after a truce. This was well below the market value at the time. Cotton speculators in London, Liverpool, Paris, Amsterdam, and Frankfurt snapped up the bonds, which were quickly oversubscribed. The Confederacy hoped that the cotton bonds would aid in securing foreign recognition, and indeed the bonds found some holders in the British Parliament, including Chancellor of the Exchequer and future Prime Minister William Gladstone. The catch to the bonds was that the investors had to take delivery of the cotton in the Confederacy. This stimulated international and southern blockade runners, as the bondholders had to risk the blockade to claim their goods. Of the $15 million face value, the Confederacy reaped about $6 million in income from bond sales. The bonds were literally floated. Income was used to build ships as well as to finance overseas operations and purchase much-needed supplies. The value of Confederate money depended on victory or the prospects of a peace settlement, and as the campaigns of 1863 opened, with the great victory at Chancellorsville and Grant's failures to capture Vicksburg, the prices rose dramatically. But with Gettysburg, the fall of Vicksburg, the capture of Atlanta, and Lincoln's re-election assuring that there would be no negotiated peace, the bonds declined quickly and eventually collapsed. During this downturn, Confederate agents ran a propaganda campaign to promote the bonds to good effect. The U.S. consul in Liverpool reported, quote, "These people here who are aiding the rebels and have taken or purchased these bonds think if worse comes and the Union is restored, that the United States government will assume the payment of their bonds." In fact, the U.S. government moved quickly to ensure that this would not be the case, inserting a clause into the 14th Amendment denying liability for any debts accrued by the Confederacy. As for the Union, it sold bonds too, war bonds. War bonds are a debt security, notes sold to individuals as an interest-bearing currency, which generate capital for the issuing government. They induce people to hold them as a years-long investment, rather than allow them to circulate as currency, thus keeping inflation under control. Financier Jay Cook founded a bank in 1861 to sell government bonds and secured many important loans for the government from northern banks. Cook succeeded with the bond sales through enlisting newspaper editors, getting them to write stories spinning bond sales as both promising investments and patriotic duties. Cook had success selling bonds where government efforts to move them had failed. Before his sales campaign, the United States had been financing the war effort by borrowing, but as the war drew out, it turned to taxation and war bonds for funding. In the end, 62% of the Union's military expenditure was financed by war bonds. In the early years of the war, with Union defeats eroding confidence on the home front, banks were reluctant to invest in bonds, and the government had to resort to paper currency, which caused inflation. This was exacerbated in 1863 when Congress passed the Enrollment Act. The act served the dual purpose of conscripting new recruits for the armies and also raised funds via the $300 commutation fee for those who preferred to hire a substitute than fight in the ranks. The Civil War also saw the first income tax on American citizens. The Revenue Act of 1861, introduced in August, collected a flat tax on income from every person residing in the United States, regardless of the source. The Internal Revenue Act of 1862 repealed the earlier law and introduced America's first progressive rate income tax. Anyone earning over $600 was taxed 3% on the extra amount. Anyone earning more than $10,000 paid 5% on the overage. The tax was specifically instituted as a temporary measure with an expiry provision set for 1866. Likewise, the Internal Revenue Act of 1864 was also viewed as an emergency war measure, but didn't expire until 1873. That act raised tax rates, created a new tax bracket, taxed citizens domestic and abroad, imposed stamp taxes on matches and photographs. The South chose not to go the route of income taxes, as states' rights meant their application and collection could be contentious. Only 8.2% of total revenues came from taxation. Tariffs were likewise impractical, as the Union blockade closed most southern ports to shipping. With its diminishing prospects for winning a peace and the nation's minuscule tax base, foreign investment in southern bonds slowed to a trickle. Borrowing and printing money became the Confederacy's primary source of revenue. A tally calculated in 1879 estimated $6.1 billion was spent by the North and $2.1 billion by the South to fight the Civil War. Damage to the landscape, cities, and transportation systems of the country was enormous. Even in the post-war period, military pensions and veterans' benefits added to the astronomical arithmetic. In 1885 alone, pension outlays were $36 million. Incredibly, the lasting expense of the Civil War was still being felt as of 2012, when the Department of Veterans Affairs revealed that there were still two pensions being paid out to the now centenarian children of Civil War veterans. You've been listening to the Civil War Podcast, a weekly podcast researched, written, and read by Aaron McGuire, with music by Tom Nagy. Thank you for listening.